Santa Cruz 101 FM, freakradio.org, Casey Neal with Breathe Life. And on the phone with me right now, I have Dan Payden from PETA, a People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Yes, sir. Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me.
How's it going today?
It's going well, thanks. How about you guys out there?
Good. We're doing all right. I played some stuff, phone messages we've been getting from folks that have been out in New Orleans and probably elsewhere that are saving the animals of the area that pretty much have seemed to be forgotten at first.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a team down in New Orleans since September 8th, which was the first day that they were actually able to get access to the city of New Orleans. Plenty of animal rescuers were lined up well before that, but FEMA and some of the National Guard agents didn't allow the animal rescue teams in. So finally, on September 8th, our team was able to get in, and we now have 16 people down there, and they've been working, 12, 16-hour days, and they've rescued about 250 animals of all sorts of species since then. So, and the messages that you were talking about, there's those audio reports and there's pictures, and we'll have video up today, actually, all at helpinganimals.com, which is our main website for domestic animal issues.
We're going to play one of those reports after our interview here. I just want to let folks know. But, yeah, pretty much almost every day, maybe every other day, there's reports, there's text reports. And like you said, yes, there's pictures there as well.
Yeah.
And also what people can do to help. What's going on with these animals? Where are they going? Are they trying to get them to their owners if they're still alive?
Yeah, they are. It's tough. I mean, it's a tough order to fill, of course. Our team, for instance, has been going through the houses when they gain entry to these places to save animals and looking for utility bills so that they can get a name of these animals' owners and the address, of course, and a phone number if possible so that they can try to reunite these animals later on. All the animals who have been rescued, and that's thousands in New Orleans alone, have been basically kind of checked in through a makeshift tracking system. They've had microchips inserted in them so that they can be tracked. And, of course, their place of discovery, their date of discovery, and so forth, and any information that people know about them has been kept at various websites. And we have links to that at PETA.org, which is our main website. One of the problems is that the facilities that have been set up in New Orleans and in that area only have capacity for, say, 1,500 animals. And every day you have hundreds more being rescued and being brought in, and every day these facilities' capacity is exceeded. So it becomes this day-in and day-out struggle to find new places for these animals, both in other cities in Louisiana and out of state. And in fact, today we actually just got an RV full of 32 dogs who some of our team members drove up from New Orleans, and they're going to be staying here with us in Virginia at our headquarters until we can either find their guardians and get them set back up with them or find new homes for them here in Virginia.
Right. That's heavy, because a lot of them, in a lot of the footage, when they were rescuing people, of course, a lot of them, they would not rescue the pets, and so a lot of folks had to leave their pets behind, and some of the conditions that they've been living under for 3 weeks now,
yeah.
And they're still rescuing, right, today? 3 weeks
yeah,
now?
They are. It's amazing. I mean, Laura Brown, who's our leader and whose reports are on our websites, she says, you know, that she's shocked to find these animals still alive, because in many cases, like you said, it's now been, you know, 21 days since these animals have seen a human face, and 21 days since they've had fresh food and water. And a lot of these animals, I think, were left behind by people who underestimated the severity of the storm and underestimated the impact it would have on their city or their parish, and, you know, left thinking that, well, the animals will be fine for 2 to 3 days and then we'll come back. And of course, you know, 2 to 3 days later, those houses were underwater and the animals were, you know, clawing at the walls and the roof to survive. So in the meantime, you know, these animals have clawed over trash bins, essentially. And, you know, our team keeps finding these animals eating corn cobs and, you know, anything that they can get their paws on, essentially, and drinking basically the floodwaters, which are just, you know, noxious and contaminated and so forth. So the death toll for animals, as it has for humans, just keeps going through the roof, and the chances of finding survivors is really dropping drastically every day.
I would imagine that cats would be a little bit harder to try to locate in some of these instances than dogs, because dogs usually are barking and make themselves known.
Yeah, a lot of the dogs that the rescuers have found are only found because people are walking down the streets and essentially whistling or making noise, and the dogs respond by barking. And a lot of the dogs are up on the second floor. You know, they've taken refuge up there, thankfully, above the water in most cases. So our team kind of, you know, walks down and calls out and hears the dogs bark from a second floor window, and then has to go through the process, aided by the National Guard in many cases, actually, of breaking in with crowbars in order to gain access and to rescue the animals. But the cats are largely running at large, and they're tough to find when they are even in the homes. I can't tell you how many, you know, our team has found holed up inside beds, you know, caught in the box springs and so forth.
Those dogs barking behind you, are those some of the dogs you guys?
Well, those are actually the dogs that come to work with us every day in our department.
Okay.
But
cool.
Yeah, I'm on the top floor of our building here. We have a 4-floor building, and we have about 5 or 6 of the 32 dogs up here. We have mostly small dogs, Chihuahuas and Pomeranians, and some tiny, you know, mutts as well. And they're terrified, and you know, we're trying to comfort them as best we can. It's a tough thing to do, and I can't imagine what it must be like for, you know, everyone in New Orleans with, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 animals in every facility down there right now.
So how many folks are in the team, and how many are, you know, how many are doing this at this point, and how many animals have been saved thus far?
We have 16 from PETA right now in New Orleans. That's among hundreds from a variety of agencies who are down there. A lot of agencies, thankfully, were able to send teams there. I'm sure that the number of volunteers down there helping animals alone is 500, if not more. I would think that the number of rescued animals so far is probably approaching, this is a guess, but I would think it's in excess of 3,000 and approaching 4,000 now. And that number could be higher if, you know, if there were more places to take these animals. And also if the National Guard, who really now seems to be the agency in charge in New Orleans, at least, was able to rescue animals themselves. In many cases, their good hearts have told them to let, you know, humane agents know when they find animals. And some of these guardsmen and guardswomen have actually saved animals themselves and then held them until a humane agency can come by and pick them up. But, you know, it's tough because with these shelters, these temporary shelters at capacity, our team and all the others have to go out there for whole days and basically leave behind any animals who are not in critical condition, because there's simply, you know, no place for them for that time being.
I guess there was a huge oil that was released out as well, and I was kind of curious if you're known of any reports of mostly birds. I've seen, like, footage of some of the birds, you know, caught in the toxic sludge.
Yeah.
Because due to the flooding and all that, and plus the oil that have been leaked out. I'm not sure exactly where that leaked out. I don't know if you have any reports of that.
I haven't. No, I'm surprised. I mean, I work next to our wildlife division, and I've been shockingly surprised that there haven't been more reports of animals affected, you know, precisely by that, especially the wild animals along the coast and so forth. I mean, I've certainly heard that the so-called fisheries industry there is crippled because of the effect of the water on the sea animals there. But I know that, you know, with all that's contaminating the floodwaters in the city of New Orleans and in the outlying areas, that in fact today Laura, our team leader, talked about what she called a toxic muck that has settled. It's basically this, you know, silt that, you know, who knows what the contaminants in it are, but it's basically covering these whole areas. Our team was just able to access new areas today for the first time, and some of the hardest hit areas, and said that this muck basically is covering the streets and the homes and inside, and it's also covering these animals, and it's burning our rescuers, you know, respiratory systems and their eyes. And so I can't imagine what it's doing to these dogs, because most of these dogs have been kind of just sitting in it for 2 to 3 weeks now, and that's been their environment. So you know, obviously on top of all the other ordeals that these animals have endured, they're having to get a lot of veterinary care for damage that these contaminants have done to their systems.
And once again, we're talking to Dan Payden from PETA. And he's a spokesperson for PETA, and we're talking about the latest rescues that happened because of Hurricane Katrina. And I also wanted to ask you about the how is this paid for? I mean, is FEMA helping you guys out? Are they right there on the front lines helping the animals?
That's a good question. They're not. The government, you know, certainly seems to have not been as prepared for this disaster as they could have been. Not only for humans, but also for animals. And the work of saving the animals left in this storm's wake has so far fallen, both the hands-on aspect and the financial aspect, to private agencies, which in most, if not all cases, are nonprofits, groups like ours. And of course, every agency is you know, asking for donations. We are at PETA.org. We have something called the Animal Emergency Fund, which helps support not only what we're doing in New Orleans, but also we try to notify communities in advance of these storms that things are approaching and the steps they need to take to keep their animals safe. We just did that, for instance, yesterday in the Keys in Miami as Hurricane Rita was approaching. The government's response has been disappointing, to say the least. For a number of days, in following the storm, FEMA and certain members of the National Guard were actually ordering, in some cases under threat of arrest and at gunpoint, Americans to abandon their animals when they themselves were evacuated. So basically saying, you know, you can come, but your animal can't. And that's bad policy. I mean, Americans deserve better, obviously, for their animals. But also, I mean, that policy led to many Americans, I think, dying in their homes because, you know, they, like so many of us, consider their animals to be members of their family and you know, would never turn their back on an animal as they wouldn't turn their back on their child or, you know, an elderly parent. And so we know, for instance, that some Americans died because they refused these evacuation orders and they refused to abandon their animals and stayed behind in conditions that, you know, they should have been able to leave with their animals. So also at PETA.org and our various websites, we're suggesting that Americans who are distraught about this situation and the impact that it's had on animals especially, contact President Bush and also various members of Congress who are, you know, now leading investigations into this matter, into the federal government's response to it, and asking them basically to make sure that animals are part of any future disaster response plans.
I also heard reports, like, not too long after the hurricane hit, that when they were trying to find people, that they're actually shooting some animals, that some of the police departments, are you aware of anything about that?
Yeah, we had seen a video of that, and it, reportedly was coming out of St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana, which is near New Orleans, and that's exactly where our team just started to arrive yesterday to check out, and it was one of the hardest hit areas. There's, you know, conflicting reports about who gave that order and to what degree it was carried out, but you know, regardless, it's an irresponsible decision and it's a callous decision. Certainly, you know, there's well-founded concerns there about aggressive dogs running in packs who have essentially gone wild now, and they may be dangerous, and they may certainly be, how do they say it, jeopardizing the integrity of human remains. But, you know, shooting dogs, regardless of the situation, is not an acceptable thing. It's not an acceptable answer. And in one case, I saw an image of a dog who had been shot, and the initial shot did not finish the dog's life, did not kill the dog, and the dog was left to suffer and to die over probably hours, you know, bleeding slowly. And that's precisely why, you know, every reputable humane agency condemns gunshot as a credible way of killing animals. So, you know, I mean, so many horrors came out of Katrina and out of the Gulf Coast for humans and animals alike, and that was one of them. And certainly, in addition to, you know, Americans learning how to take better responsibility for their own animals when these disasters strike, I think the government at all levels needs to take lessons and learn how to be better prepared to protect animals, because that's a service not only to the animals but also to their owners and to our citizens, our fellow citizens.
Yeah, I asked you that question about the dog people I guess I don't know if it was the police department that was actually doing it at first, because it sounds like once the National Guard came in, everything was calmed down. I'm hearing reports from that from other folks in other areas.
Yeah.
The local police departments were the most violent in the whole situation at the beginning. Shooting people, shooting animals, you know, I mean, attacking people. I've heard all sorts of different reports, and they're all over the net right now about what's happened there, and the local police department just kind of losing it on that whole end.
Yeah.
And it seemed to stabilize more, because it sounds like, reading some of the reports, that you guys have a really good relationship with the National Guard that's in there taking care of.
Absolutely, yeah. The thing about the National Guard, at least in the state of Louisiana, is that our team has had really good relations with many of these men and women who are down there and doing such good work. The thing is that time is running out for these animals. You know, it's now been over 3 weeks since these animals have had any basic care, and they're dying, and, you know, and our team is finding, I think, as many dead as they are alive. And we're actually asking people now to contact the governor of Louisiana. Her name is Kathleen Blanco, and she is the one who has the authority to give orders to the Louisiana National Guard. And so we're asking her right now to tell the National Guard to carry with them, you know, food and water for animals when they do find these animals, because in many cases they're the ones who are making the first entry into these areas and finding animals. And so even if they themselves can't be the ones who are rescuing the animals, to at least provide for them in the meantime, and to notify some of the hundreds of animal rescuers down there to those animals' presence in, you know, in certain addresses, so that people can get in there and try to get these animals out before it's, you know, before it's too late.
What other groups are down there besides PETA that are doing this work?
Oh, probably hundreds. I know that Humane Society of the United States is. I know some California-based organizations, I believe one's called Noah's Wish, is there. The ASPCA, you know, everyone has gone down. One of our staff members' sisters runs the Indianapolis Animal Control Agency, and she took about 10 of her members down with horse trailers and the whole nine yards. So, you know, thankfully private agencies have been very quick to respond. It's just a shame that, you know, they're doing it out of their own pocket, and that, you know, the work of saving an entire state's animals has fallen on people from outside those states, you know, without any financial or basically logistical support from parish level, state level, and federal level agencies.
We're talking to Dan Payden here, a spokesperson for PETA, and I guess I want to ask y'all how people can get involved, what folks can do. You mentioned writing. Also,
yeah.
I'm sure there's donations. Folks can go to PETA.org.
Yep.
What else can folks do?
Donations, writing to officials, regardless of whether you know your elected reps in California are sitting on these committees or not, it still will make a difference. You know, they still need people down there. They still need donations of equipment and so forth, boats. Believe it or not, floodwaters are still there, and boats are still in short supply. As you can imagine, animal carriers and crates are in short supply with all these animals. There needs to be more, you know, temporary places to hold these animals. At PETA.org, we have a link to different websites where people can sign up to volunteer to go down, and also sign up to foster some of these animals. I think last week there was a Texas man, evidently an oil tycoon of some sort, who flew some 80 dogs to San Francisco and San Diego, I think, to shelters there. So there's always a need for good homes, reliable people to care for some of these animals and possibly end up adopting them. And we have links to how people can do that at PETA.org. So, you know, it's a matter of making sure officials do the right thing now for the animals who are still stranded in the city of New Orleans and beyond, and also calling on officials to make sure that they do the right thing for animals in the future by making sure that, you know, disaster response plans include responding to the plight of the animals.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We're talking to Dan Payden here from PETA.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a tough issue, but an important one, so thanks for discussing it.
Well, we're going to end off here with the latest report from helpinganimals.com. People can go there to find out more information and also read and listen to almost daily reports from the phone.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
Again, thanks again, Dan. And,
thank you, Bob.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too, sir.
All right.
Along the way to our next stop, we saw a huge German Shepherd who had been chained to a porch and was dead in the yard and completely stuffed and bloated and had been dead for several days. And once again, an animal who was left with no chance in hell of surviving the storm or the aftermath of dealing with the toxic flood water coming around them and having no food or water. I'm sure it was a very painful death. And then we went on to pick up a couple of dogs who had been left in houses for at least 3 weeks. One was a Shar Pei kind of pit bull mix who was in this just absolutely filthy house, and no food or water had been left for this dog. She was getting really thin, and she was starting to go a little, I think, house crazy somehow, because we were trying to get closer to her and she would eat out of my hand, but then she would stop to growl and try to snap. So she was really in a lot of distress, and we finally managed to get a carrier into the kitchen and corner her and scoop her into the carrier that way. But when we had her isolated in another room, she was just spinning like a dog you would see who's been in a kennel too long. And I feel like this was a really abusive home for her. I don't know if she maybe was used for breeding, but she was such a sweet little girl once we got her out of there. But just seeing her spinning, and she was like trying to bite her tail. But then once we got her in the carrier, we were able to pet her and get the leash off of her, and she drank two bowls of water. She was just absolutely dehydrated, and then she started napping when we got her in the car. And as we were leaving that stop, we ran into some really nice National Guard guys who let us know about a place where a black cop billy pig was, and her fence had blown down, and she was rooting around for nothing. They had left no food or water for her, no way for her to get into a house or shed or anything, no protection. And she was actually in pretty good physical condition. And we managed to lure her into a carrier with some granola bars and some baked potato chips, and she was very happy with that. And then she drank two whole bowls of water and made one of the cutest sounds I've ever heard in my life. She was actually kind of snorting with happiness while she was lapping up the water. And then she just crashed. We put a blanket in there for her, and she just took a nap on the way back. We also found a lot of dogs running at large today. and had a couple of frustrating stops where people had called in and asked that their animals be checked on, and we're getting those as quickly as we possibly can. These are people, for whatever reason, have not been allowed to return to the area or just don't have the means to return, and honestly, most of these people don't have anything to return to. Some of these homes are absolutely destroyed, and it's becoming an actual structural danger for the animals to be in there, so we're getting those out as well. But we had some frustrating stops today because people had requested their animals be rescued or checked on and had not bothered to call to let us know that they had already returned home. So that wasted a bit of time for both teams today, unfortunately. And it would just take a simple call for people to check in and let them know. And it would allow us to get to a lot more animals who really do need us. So it's really important that people do that. And then on the way to our next stop, we heard some barking in a house and went in and broke down the back door and came in and found this beautiful little 10-pound black and tan Chihuahua mix. And she was very, very excited to have someone carry her out to the car. She had no food or water, and she was just an absolute sweetheart. We put her in with food and water and a blanket, and she just conked out with the air conditioning. And we also found more animals to feed on the street. We're setting up feeding stations for running at large animals to try to make friends with them so that we can eventually get them safely to the shelter as well. And also we managed to get to a house today where a mother dog and her six puppies were living under a house, and managed to coax her out, and they were very, very friendly. She was kind of a houndy dog, and the puppies were just ridiculously cute and giving kisses and jumping all over the place. And so we got all of those little guys scooped up and gave them some canned food and water. And again, they were really, really dehydrated. We were very happy to get all those babies in the car. Also, as time goes on and animals have been left longer and longer and have been let out of homes or have broken their way out, we're seeing a lot more packs of dogs around, and we're encountering more and more highly aggressive animals. And they have, of course, every right to be because they've been left for almost a month at this time. But those cases are taking quite a long time to get to, and we're always glad to get those guys out of that situation, and most of them do calm down once we get them into the vans. But we're seeing more of them packing up on the streets and everything, so we have feeding stations on every street in our zone to help those animals out. And the body condition of these animals is improving, which is a great thing. Let's see, also we heard a really tragic story today about this was at our meeting this morning. There was a Catahoula hound who had been chained inside an attic in the top of a home. And again, an animal who was given no chance to survive other than being raised up into the attic space, which could easily have flooded as well, as high as the flood damage has happened in some of these homes. But to chain them in the attic with no chance of escape. And a rescue team went out to this dog today and found that the entire roof had caved in. So the dog had been crushed. She had been chained up there, no food or water, and then was found crushed in a pile of rubble when the roof caved in the house. It just, every day I think I've seen the worst thing, and then it just amazes me the torture that you see of these animals. Not only are they left behind, which I know I've said before is bad enough, but it's just like there was extra effort made to ensure that they wouldn't survive and ensure that they would suffer. And it's just unreal to see some of these situations the animals are in. So we're getting to more and more as we can. And we also picked up a couple of other friendly dogs today who were really, really dehydrated. So we were glad to get them in because, honestly, we don't have any idea when these people are coming in. They're not calling to let us know if they have requested help for their animal. We also visited a German Shepherd who had been left in a home for at least 3 weeks now, and very, very protective of her space. And I think terribly abused at some point. Again, she's got some severe psychological damage to her. She was coming forward for the food and wagging her tail, but then when I extended my hand, she flattened her ears and put her head down and showed her teeth and started growling and coming towards me. So it's just, it's awful to see the situations we do see with the dead animals and sick animals, but it's also terrible to see the mental distress of these animals who've been left and I'm sure are in a panic and they're hungry and they're thirsty and they're scared and they're in these houses that are about 1,000 degrees full of this toxic crap that they're breathing in and that is all over their feet and all over their furniture and have every right to be aggressive and distressed. And it's just, it's very, very sad to see more and more of these guys reacting this way. So we'll be using our large humane dog trap to get some of these guys. It's going to be much kinder than coming in. Some of them aren't even receptive to food at this point because they're just kind of gone out of their minds, I think, in a panicked state. So we're working very hard with those guys, and it just takes a lot of patience and kindness, and we've got a really good field team, and Jess is just, again, amazing with these guys. So we'll be getting more and more of them, and we've got an assignment in a couple of new areas tomorrow, so I will let you guys know how that goes.
Hey, radio listeners. Bored with bland, Clear Channel brand programming?
The requirement for dependable internet services.
The World Trade Center site.
Innovative, electronically choreographed score to a spectacular aerial fireworks show.
Can't handle commercials?
I love the 80s.
Totally beans.
Tired of repetitive radio?
World Trade Center.
There's always Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Or
Freedom Tower, as it will be called, will be the tallest skyscraper in the world when it is completed. And it will stand where the twin towers of the World Trade Center stood.
Turn off the radio! Turn off that bullshit!
Unlicensed, non-commercial, pirate radio for the Santa Cruz community and for the global community.
So real that the radio will never play it, but that's cool. The enemy's supposed to hate it.
What's on the radio? Propaganda, mind control, and turning it on. It's like putting on the blindfold, because when you bring in the real, you don't get rotation. Let you take over the station. And yeah, I know it's part of their plans. They make us think it's all about party and dancing.
I see some enemies. We'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of information, free radio.